Okay, welcome everybody to the Transportation and Finance Policy Division. We are a division, just to stand corrected from last time. We have several bills before us, and quorum is present. And we have approval of the minutes from last Thursday, February 13th. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do move the approval of the February 13th minutes as presented.
Okay. All in favor of the Petersburg motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion carries. Okay, members, before we get into the discussion of the bills, I just wanted to I didn't have a chance to talk about this last week because we had a lot going on the agenda and even went overtime. So, but I did a few folks have asked me about how we're going to be handling bonding bills and, you know, a few other I would consider urgent issues before the committee. And Representative Torkelson and I did have a chance to talk about some of these things the Friday before session. So I just wanted to mention, just in case this was on folks' minds, with regard to bonding, we are going to do, Representative Torkelson and I agreed that we'll do what we have done in the past in this committee, which is not necessarily pass bonding bills out of the committee, but hearing them after deadline, after the finance deadline, so that anyone that has a bonding bill will have an opportunity to have their bill heard. Of course, those bills are in the Capital Investment Committee, but there are many transportation projects. So that's how we're going to handle bonding. There are a few issues that have emerged that I want to give folks a heads up on so they can start to think about and work on if necessary. Last Friday, Representative Torkelson and I serve on the Oversight Committee for the new VTRS system, the formerly MNLARS, and we had a very informative hearing there about Real ID. And as many of you know, if you've been following this issue, only 11% of Minnesotans who are eligible to obtain a Real ID have done so at this point. We learned that really, if this isn't rectified by, really, one would have to apply by summer, I think, in order to get it by the October deadline. So there's some real issues with this Real ID, and I am getting a bill drafted on that that I will circulate to both sides of the aisle to see if we can, you know, get some resources and other policy issues dealt with regard to Real ID. So that's something we're going to be addressing in this committee that I think is of particular urgency. And then finally, Representatives Petersburg and Tapke and Elkins have been meeting on a committee also that was mandated by statute last year in the transportation bill with regards to the criteria, different criteria that could be utilized for vehicle registration fees. And so my understanding is that committee has come to some consensus now, and there may be an opportunity, again, for some bipartisan legislation on that. I think Representative Tabke may be working on that, correct? And so, again, I would invite members from both sides of the aisle who want input to talk with Representative Tabke, talk with me about Real ID as well. And again, those are just a few, some issues that have come up, and I wanted to let folks know we are going to have hearings on those. We are going to deal with those, as well as the number of bills that keep piling up before our committee. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for bringing those very important issues forward. And the issue of timeliness with both of those is critical. As if you don't know, you know, MNLARS hasn't gone away. The system is still operating until we get the new system up and running. We're depending on that old system to keep on. And when I talk to staff about it, they say, well, there's pieces of that we just don't touch because if it breaks, we don't know how to fix it. So the sooner anything we would do that might delay the implementation of VTRS is could potentially be a disaster.
Yeah.
So I would encourage thank you for bringing these issues up. I would encourage us to move as quickly as possible, and I would think about whether or not we couldn't combine the Real ID changes that were suggested along with the registration changes into one package and send it as quickly as possible with negotiating with the Senate, get it to the governor's desk, get it signed so that FAST can get the work done and we don't lose MNLARS in the process.
That is a good suggestion, and again, I had a preliminary meeting with staff on Friday, even right after our right after the alarms went off at that meeting earlier in the day, and so we hope to have some language as quickly as possible. Representative Tabke, where are you with your bill drafting?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The registration tax bill has been drafted, and it is waiting to be jacketed. We're hoping to have a hearing on it here in transportation sometime before the end of this month is the goal. Working very closely with Senator Kiffmeyer on everything. We're going to try and have concurrent language going both through the Senate and the House and get that done as quickly as we can.
Well, you know, as soon as these bills are ready, we'll hear them. I mean, I agree with Representative Torkelson that there is time is of the essence. And while the committee deadlines have been extended for a week, I hope everybody is aware of that. I still think these two bills are priorities. And as soon as we can hear them, we will hear them. Members also note that a week from today, the committee will not be meeting. There's the speaker has indicated that's Tuesday, the 25th. So we no meeting on the 25th. And again, if these bills that we're describing are ready to go, we might meet a week from Friday, but that's you know, at this point, we're not, don't count on it. But again, if we're ready to go with the bills that we were talking about in order to expedite them, as Representative Torkelson suggested, we may add an extra meeting. So wanted to give everybody kind of a lay of the land here. And then this Thursday, we'll be continuing the discussion of Representative Tabke's bill. We'll have, I think, a robust committee discussion of that bill, and it would be my intention to vote on that and move it out of our committee on Thursday. So with that, any other, if there's no other questions on these process issues?
Chair?
Yes.
In relation to Thursday's agenda, we've been working on a bill and tried to work with Representative Tabke on administrative citations and safety on the light rail. The bill has, as I mentioned previously to you, has been drafted and is in the process of getting jacketed. We haven't received them yet. Would it be appropriate to have our bill heard similarly to have a fuller discussion on that issue this Thursday if possible?
Thank you, Representative Koznick. You know, it's really our practice to, you know, hear bills once they are officially introduced, if they've been assigned a number, if there has been, they're publicly available. That would be the criteria I would have for hearing a bill. You know, sometimes we do this at the end of session. I personally don't like it. I think we need to just have bills with numbers before us. But if you have some language that maybe you would want to offer as an amendment, I think that would be wholly appropriate. And then we could have a committee discussion and, you know, the amendment you would be able to have, you know, the public involved, that kind of thing. So I would be very open to that this Thursday. But in terms of a bill, if it hasn't been introduced officially, I don't think we should be able to hear it. It's just too condensed a time frame. There might be fiscal costs and a fiscal note. And so if it's not ready, we could hear it potentially at a later date. I'd have to review it and see what else we have before us. But I would encourage you to get your ideas out there, and we can hear them Thursday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the suggestion. It is possible we will have a bill number by then. It's my hope, but I appreciate your suggestion, and we'll go from there. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else before we dive in here? Okay. Well, members, we have a couple of bills from Representative Sundin, House File 2986, the State Rail Safety Inspection Requirements Bill, and I will move that we refer House File 2986 to the Labor Committee. I think that is your suggestion, Representative?
Yes, thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Hornstein, committee members. The Railroad Workers in Minnesota, UTU Smart TD, contacted last year regarding questions and concerns they had with the MnDOT Freight Rail Office Inspections Program. I encourage them to work with the department to gain consensus and draft legislation to improve state rail safety inspections. The more I've heard about working conditions on the railroad lines and yards in Minnesota, it appears this legislation is necessary. I'm pleased to present House File 2986, which I understand is consensus language with the department and UTU Smart TD to assure state rail safety statutes are enforced. This legislation will improve rail inspection and railroad industry safety. Both parties are committed to working together for railroad safety. I ask for your support for House File 2986 inspection program requirements. With me today, advocating for the bill, is Phil Qualley, State Legislative Director for UTU Smart TD, Minnesota, with brief comments about the bill. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Qualley. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Philip Qualley. I'm State Director for the Sheet Metal Air, Rail, and Transit Union, Transportation Division, formerly the United Transportation Union. Representing 1,100 railroad workers in Minnesota, I myself am a conductor of 40 years, remote control locomotive operator, and yard master. My comments will be brief. First, Mr. Chairman and committee, if you'd please embellish me a moment. I would like to respectfully recognize the work of former MnDOT employee Susan Aylesworth, who is no longer with us, who did great work for the citizens of Minnesota for many years and is no longer with us. Just a moment to respect her work for railroad safety in the past. Thank you for hearing House File 2986 Inspection Program Requirements. We appreciate your committee's interest and leadership for railroad safety. The railroad workers have a great deal of respect and appreciation for the efforts of the Minnesota Department of Transportation Rail Inspections Office. We believe policy language set forth in House File 2986 enjoys consensus between rail labor and the department. We are proud to have worked to facilitate the Minnesota's participation in the Federal Railroad Administration's federal-state partnership program during the 2007 and 2008 biennium. We believe passage of House File 2986 will assure state statutes at Chapter 219 and other applicable state statutes have full compliance. Passage of law into 2986 is necessary. And for our 1,100 members in Minnesota, I thank you very much for hearing this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Qualley. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify in favor or opposed to the bill? Questions for Mr. Qualley, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine is not in relation to the bill, but in relation to the workers on rail. The wonderful, wonderful story of this last week, a six-year-old girl wandered away from her parents. Two workers on the train thought they saw something strange on the side of the tracks, stopped the train, got out with their flashlights to check it out, and it was the six-year-old girl. She was cold. They asked if they could take her inside. She said, thank you. They had this wonderful, respectful exchange between them. They took her on the train and covered her with warm clothes and socks and restored her to her family. It was such an amazing thing, if you imagine, rail workers just seeing something at the side of the track that they thought looked unusual and saved a six-year-old girl. Just holding up the rail workers.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. Are there questions of Mr. Qualley? I do see a list of people that want to testify. So our next testifier is Dave Brown.
Good afternoon, Chairman Hornstein and committee members. My name is Dave Brown. I am the National Region 3 and Minnesota State Legislative Chairman for the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers of 49,000 members in the country, and also founding members for the International Brotherhood of Teamsters Rail Conference, 1.4 million members. For 157 years, the BLT has continued to work with the industry, the government, federal agencies, and other rail unions to make certain the railroads provide for the safety of our members, the public, and the environment. We feel House File 2986 provides transparency when the results of a reported defect are made available to the reporting body or the safety representative. We feel this bill gives valuable protections for the businesses and citizens that rely on rail transportation to get their products to market in a safe and efficient manner. Through the state rail inspector's expertise of inspecting the railroads for defects and the commissioner's processing enforcement of any non-compliance issues. We agree and support the previous testimony of the Sheet Metal Air and Rail Transportation Union for House File 2986. Ask your support of House File 2986, providing the commissioner and this state's rail safety inspectors its necessary knowledge, instruments and tools to actually investigate, evaluate, and report non-compliant safety issues on our state's railroads. We encourage you to vote aye for this safety legislation and make it a permanent commitment for the safety of rail workers, rail carriers, and the general public. I wish to thank Representative Sundin for bringing this important rail safety issue forward. I want to thank you, Chairman Hornstein, and members of this committee for the opportunity to have my testimony heard here today.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Are there questions of Mr. Brown? Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Next on the agenda, we have John Appitz from the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Appitz. I'm now the Executive Director of the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association, so that's what I'm doing here. And suffice it to say, we were reviewing this bill. We'll be meeting with the chairman on Thursday. Have the opportunity to talk, so just want to reserve comments until such time, and if there are any questions, we'll be happy to respond to those as well. Thank you.
Thank you. I would offer any questions of Mr. Appitz. Congratulations on your Lydia Biori, is Lydia here? Okay. All right. Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to testify for or against this legislation? I have Mr. Davis's name on the, but I'm not sure if this is a bill you were testifying. Okay. All right. Okay. Member discussion. Does the chair have any, the author have any closing comments? Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to hear from the department. We've heard they're in favor of this bill. I'd like to hear it and comments, especially on the fiscal note, which has changed.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Bill Gardner. I'm Director of the Rail Office of the Minnesota Department of Transportation.
And I think the question from Representative Torkelson had to do with this department's position on the bill, correct? And any fiscal costs?
Yes, Representative, we have had an opportunity to review the bill, and we don't see any issues with it with respect to our responsibilities for rail safety. And it's consistent with our activities, and we'll continue to work with the stakeholders to respond to complaints about rail safety and to do our investigative work that we do.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the fiscal cost, I believe, is you've agreed to absorb that within the department. Is that correct?
Yes. We think we can continue to make improvements in the program with the existing staff resources that we have, and that there will not be any additional costs.
Thank you for that.
Representative Runbeck. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if maybe the author could answer, but so there's a body of federal law, obviously, that governs how railroads operate, and to, you know, this is another layer of law. Is it the same or different? Do we need this law? And do we have any examples of how currently, you know, there's not been enforcement of some of the safety laws? I mean, we haven't heard any examples of what's the problem we're trying to solve.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck. Chairman Hornstein, I'll defer to Phil Qualley with the UTU.
Mr. Qualley.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, we have a handout before you that shows the Minnesota state statutes at Chapter 219 And to the first part of the question, no, the federal and state rail safety regulations are separate and apart. The federal regulations are at 49 CFR 200 to 299, and they deal with the operation of the railroad in several disciplines, motive power, operating, signal, track, mechanical, air brake, and so on. State statutes cannot be redundant to federal statutes because they would then be federally preempted. A state may take more restrictive act on a federal regulation, and that has been upheld under federal preemption in the courts. However, our state statutes, in my opinion, and I would defer to Director Gardner as well, respectfully, Mr. Chairman, are separate and apart in our different jurisdictional areas for public safety, railroad worker safety, as listed in the chapter appendix that we provided to you. None of those chapter appendix pieces at 219 will be found in the federal regulations. I hope that answers your question. Thank you.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's fine on that first question. And the second question was, do we have examples currently where there isn't enforcement sufficient to your approval?
Mr. Qualley.
Mr. Chairman, I respectfully defer to the department.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we respond to a wide range of concerns and complaints about rail safety. We also do proactive inspection of rail safety for physical assets. And we have a variety of processes for trying to address those, working with the railroads to address them. In many instances, those can be corrected on an informal basis, but we also have authority and statute to escalate as necessary, either through commissioner's orders to correct deficiencies, as well as through administrative contested case hearings. So we have a variety of options at our disposal, and so when we find out about a concern, we do investigate and respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gardner, just clarification, does the department fully implement the statute?
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe we do. We are in a process of making certain improvements in terms of how we give notice to folks, how we make them aware that there's a complaint process that needs to be followed, of the time that takes to work with the various parties. So I do believe that we are addressing the requirements in the statutes.
One follow-up question.
Representative Mason.
How long from the time that you serve notice is the problem or issue solved? How many things do you have on the books that have been on the docket for a long time?
Mr.
Chair, Representative, typically if we issue a commissioner's order to correct a situation, that would normally be within 30 days. We don't have a backlog, per se, of items right now that need to be corrected.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion, members? Okay. Chairman Sundin, did you want to make any closing comments before? First of all, anyone else in the audience would like to testify for or against the bill? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Herstein. This is a terrific bill, and I thank testifiers for their input here and the questions that we've heard today. It's a good bill. Please vote yes.
All right. Well, I will renew my motion that House File 2986 be referred to the Labor Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion aye. Prevails. Thank you very much. You're on your way to your committee now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And if you could stay seated, we will take up House File 2987. And this this is a rail yard emergency preparedness safety training legislation. And I will move similarly to the last bill that House File 2987 be referred to the Labor Committee. Representative Sundin, please tell us about your bill. And we have a number of testifiers as well on this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman of Committee. The House File 2987, Railroad Yard Evacuation Drills, Worker Safety Training. Thank you for hearing this today. We appreciate your committee's leadership for railroad safety in Minnesota. UTU Smart TD recognizes the state's interest to assure railroad worker safety. Railroads transport a tremendous amount of placarded hazardous material across Minnesota. The railroad workers of Minnesota do not receive live or actual railroad yard evacuation drills at certain railroad yards. Our railroad workers have sustained numerous and severe injuries from rail yard accidents and hazardous material exposures. House File 2987 sets forth requirements on Class 1 and 2 railroad carriers in Minnesota to conduct live or actual railroad yard emergency evacuation drills. This legislation has been crafted with best practice principles and will have minimal impact on productivity. The practical application as set forth in legislation is efficient, reasonable, and will improve railroad yard emergency response. This safety legislation is not federally preempted. In Minnesota and year 2020, we respectfully assert the passage of House File 2987 into law is absolutely necessary. For 1,200 workers in Minnesota, please accept my appreciation for your interest for railroad safety. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Sundin. We have a number of testifiers at the end for this bill. Mr. Qualley, welcome back to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you very much. Again, I am Philip Qualley, State Director for the Railroad Workers Union. I will note, first of all, that with the cover letter we have presented with you today, which is there are some attachments with it, that I look forward to answering any questions or concerns you have. We have abstracted information in your handout with our intention to try to demonstrate the need for this bill. I also would like to please to know that while many railroad workers are either working right now or on their rest, today we have Mr. Kurt Olson from Union Pacific Railway, an engineer, Mr. Lucas Boffman, Canadian Pacific Railway, local chairman and safety representative, as well as Mr. John Haggerty from BNSF Railway, who will also testify what's going on their properties. John Haggerty is the local president of Local 1000. Bottom line, folks, is railroad workers do not get live and actual emergency evacuation drills in railroad yards. Today, I will keep my testimony brief. I can walk through the bill. I can explain what the practical application of what we're asking for would be in a real drill and answer any questions on preemption. Unfortunately, our council is not able to be here today, is traveling. Having said that, we want to applaud the legislature for the work you did in recent bienniums, most notably in 2014 when Minnesota Statutes 115E at 042 was improved to require live emergency evacuation drills with emergency responders, public responders, fire and EMT to certain yards. However, with each one of those drills, railroad workers are not being included, and we are not called off of the equipment to do a live evacuation drill. Also, it is not happening, and so this bill intends to modify 115E with the requirements set forth in the legislation before you. Unfortunately, another piece that's not happening that is in statute at 115E is the Railway Labor Act safety representatives for employees are to be noticed when an evacuation drills are held. That has not occurred. I'll leave it at that. I want to very briefly just walk through the bill in terms of construction. We call for the frequency of live and non-computer simulated evacuation drills on Class 1 and 2 carriers. We have set forth the requirement of the type of yards to perform evacuation drills based on the number of cars per week and whether a placarded hazardous material or car moves through that yard. The legislation sets forth yard evacuation drill planning with the workers and the management, the actual drill itself, and then debriefing requirements with all parties. The posting of rail yard evacuation plans and the location of whited linsox and rally point shelters. Required public emergency response for chemical assessment teams may attend or coordinate with live or actual carrier drills. And then the frequency of drills for railroad worker participation. Finally, minor reporting requirements. And nothing in the state statute limits a carrier's use of a computer-simulated training in addition to the live exercises required in the legislation set forth. As a practical application of what we're asking for here, let me walk through it this way. First of all, many of our railroad yards handle a tremendous amount of hazardous materials. We are not at liberty to talk publicly about the chemicals that we handle for security reasons. But what we, again, would like to see is simply in a practical application is carriers convene a working group with workers to plan the evacuation drill. Carriers call the evacuation drill at their convenience and per legislative requirements. The evacuation drill commences with a radio evacuation notice. And most importantly, the wind direction set forth to the crews, all crews identified, contacted, yard crews respond, so we have an immediate accounting, intercrew communication with the trains themselves and the yard crews. We secure our equipment with mechanical handbrakes or air brakes, and we move to the rally points. And at the rally points then, the crews are accounted for and accounting takes place. We then move back to our trains on radio communication call, and the debriefing commences at the carrier's convenience afterwards. It's not rocket science, folks, but we need this. We've had workers seriously injured with inhalation hazards and injuries, and we simply are not receiving live evacuation drills in the yards. I will not go into the safety committee aspect of this too much, other than to say that on the CN Railway, they have been asking for and noticing the need for evacuation drills and fire extinguishers to be charged and buildings to be posted, and it did not happen. We finally had to write a OSHA complaint of noncompliance, and OSHA did find noncompliance in northern Minnesota on the CN Railway with fire extinguishers not charged. We had noticed the carriers in advance of the problem, the police corrected, no response. And we also, the OSHA found that the buildings were not posted, and you'll find a fine notice in your packet. But we also asked OSHA to please look at the railroad yards and the evacuation plans in terms of 29 CFR 1910.38, which is basically our life code and evacuation requirements. And we did have a response back from OSHA saying essentially that the OSHA statute regulation that I just quoted did not apply to railroad yards. Hence, we are not federally preempted. A state has the right to act. Also, our regulatory council has assured us and reviewed this, and this legislation is not federally preempted. So I want to thank you for hearing my comments. And I would like to just respectfully ask Mr. Chairman if a couple other members of the UTU, Smart TD, could come up and testify as to what they're experiencing. And I look forward to answering any questions or concerns you may have. Thank you.
We have several people who have signed up ahead of time, and I'll call on them. The first is Lucas Baugman. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Joachim has a question of Mr. Qualley.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Qualley, I want to thank you for adding on line 2.21 the local emergency response authorities. Wondering if you'd given thought to also add, so we have just under a dozen hazmat teams around the state that cover four or five counties at a time. So they, you know, they reside in local fire departments. I have one in Hopkins that covers five counties. But it'd be nice to think about adding them as well, because they would be responding.
Mr. Qualley.
Thank you, Ms. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and committee member. We have crafted, yes, we've crafted the legislation so that the railroad yard worker evacuation drills could be in coordination with the annually required public responder fire and EMT response that are now required in statute. So that option is certainly available. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Representative Yochim. And I'll just also add that, you know, in the district I represent, I have several different railroads, large and small, bisecting. And some of the neighborhood organizations have been very interested in doing their own, you know, having community drills. And, you know, the kind of things that you're talking about, you know, impact communities as well. The hazardous waste isn't just confined to the, and the potential for a problem isn't just confined to the rail yard. There are communities that surround the yards and these lines. And so, you know, I'm similarly interested in looking at, you know, how this type of arrangement can help empower neighborhoods and communities to, you know, be more aware of where they need to do and where they need to go in the event of an emergency. So, Mr. Qualley.
May I share one very important piece of information to that point, and that is under the General Code of Operating Rules, and formerly the General Code of Operating Rules 1967 and prior, if the public should ever hear a railroad horn with a series of short consecutive blasts repeating, the public should test the wind direction and go the other way. Thank you.
I was not aware of that. Okay. Representative Bernardi.
I just wanted to add, too, I mean, workers are an important part of this equation, and making sure that they're a part of these drills is super important. And I just wanted to add that, and just like you say, the community is important. For sure, our workers need to be a part of it. And I just want, I don't think I've ever shared this with the committee, but I have one of the biggest yards, probably in the country, in my district. And we actually, it wasn't this circumstance, but we lost a family friend that was killed on the job when I was younger. And whatever we can do to keep our workers safe is important.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi. Okay, and now if there's no further questions or comments, Mr. Lucas Baugman. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I am Lucas Baughman, local chairman and legislative representative, Smart TD, Local 911. With roughly 180 members on the Canadian Pacific Railway between St. Paul and Minneapolis yards across Wisconsin, Glenwood, Thief River Falls, and Enderlin, North Dakota. I have 14 years of service as a conductor. For our CP train and yard crews, I ask you to support the rail yard evacuation drills at yards across Minnesota. Rail yard evacuation drills to protect the lives of our crews is long overdue. In my 14 years at CP, I have never experienced an actual yard evacuation drill, nothing that included crews getting notice of a need to evacuate, the wind direction, and getting off equipment to go to a rally point. At St. Paul Yard, where I work, the only reason I know where the rally points are is because I am a part of the Health and Safety Committee. That committee is committed to these drills, but for years, 3 years or so, we have never been able to have to hold a live drill. The safety committee is made up of union officers and senior level managers who are all committed to these drills. We've yet to see one. Last summer of 2019, CP did perform a computer-based tabletop exercise with the St. Paul Fire Department. Crews did not get a good or complete report back from these results. However, this was all done in an office setting. Crews did not even know it happened, were not told to evacuate, tie down their cars, go to a rally point, and take an accounting of crew members. Our railroad workers need protection and legislative intervention. Mr. Chairman, committee members, for our 180 CP train crew members in Local 911, thank you for my testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Baughman. Questions of the witness? Testifier, thank you very much for being here. Our next testifier is John Haggerty.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, while we're waiting for Mr. Haggerty, Union Pacific Yards, as well as Canadian National Yards, we simply do not receive live fire drills whatsoever, and we have had some bad incidents where railroad workers have been placed back into hazmat containment zones without protective equipment while the hazmat teams were still on the cars. Again, this bill seeks to address protection of workers' safety. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Haggerty, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. John Haggerty. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I am John Haggerty, local president of Smart Transportation Division Local 1000, with roughly 200 members on the BNSF Railway at Minneapolis North Town Yard. Our crews also operate to the Fargo-Dilworth area, Duluth, and Wilmer, Minnesota. I have 19 years of service as a conductor and a switchman. As a representative of our membership on the BNSF, I ask you to support the safety legislation. We do not give live evacuation drills where we get to a call to evacuate, secure equipment, and go to an evacuation point. The yard managers do not want to delay productivity. BNSF does do hazardous material drills. The minimum requirement may be once a year. One of the biggest problems we have is the people in charge of the drill do not have the proper training on how to quickly identify the cars and what chemical is in them. Without that information, they cannot relay to the crews what evacuation point to go to and what the minimum safe distance from the chemical is, and the drill fails right from the start. We also deal with the yard crossing issues. When long trains arrive in the yard, and the majority of the yard crossings for access in and out of the yard are blocked. We have asked BNSF to reinstall the crossings they removed in other parts of the yard to be available for emergency use only. BNSF refuses to do so. It should also be noted that we have had some very serious hazmat exposure and inhalation injuries at Northtown. Some of the hazmat injuries have ended with long-term health issues and or ended railroad workers' careers. The safety bill is necessary. Railroad workers need legislative help. For our 200 train crew members, Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Haggerty? Okay, thank you for your testimony. Next on the list is Mr. Dave Brown.
Good afternoon, Chairman Ornstein. Good afternoon, and members of the committee. My name is Dave Brown, and I'm the National Region 3 Legislative Chairman and also the Minnesota State Legislative Chairman for the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen, and we are the founding members of the Division of International Brotherhoods of Teamsters Rail Conference with 1.4 million members. I've had nearly 49 years working on the railroad and all the operating crafts, from ground personnel to locomotive engineer, which I'm still working today. I know firsthand the benefits and importance of repeat live situation evacuation training drills after personally assisting as the safety representative for all locomotive engineers that travel in and out of Minnesota with the planning, execution, debriefing, and critiquing, very important, of live situation emergency evacuation drills as a training tool that all first responders can attest to is the safe and positive course of action. Live emergency evacuation training drills with rail workers along with their designated safety representative under the Railroad Labor Act and the carriers is a responsible action to take for anyone that works with or around hazardous materials in rail yards, especially the large quantities of all hazardous materials known to exist that rail workers handle in the regular course of their duties. These emergency action drills have the ability to eliminate possible injuries or deaths when an undesired release of a hazardous material occurs in the many rail yards where rolling stock are moved and where trains originate to proceed to their destinations here in Minnesota and other states. Repetitive annual evacuation safety drills afford rail workers the confidence and knowledge to make the sometimes split-second decisions necessary for a positive result. Those benefits and level of multiple live situation drills is a safe course of action at having a chance for a successful outcome. There is no one here that has more of an initial risk during a hazmat incident in a rail yard on a daily basis than the rail worker. We who work in and around these large rolling hazmat containers with every dangerous chemical and gas known to exist have the most and are the first to lose. The rail carrier and their lawyers do not have the same risk of injury or losing their lives in a hazmat incident in the rail yard that we do, the railroad men and women, and we face it each and every day. There have been incidents of rail workers being exposed and injured after an undesired release in rail yards due to a lack of training that should have been provided by the rail carrier. The rail carriers have no effective live situation evacuation training drills for all the rail workers in the rail yards today. Many problem areas and situations can be scrutinized and remedied through the debriefing of all participants, after a live evacuation drill to determine where the best location to shelter in place and how that is safely achieved, or the best and safest course of evacuating the location of a hazmat incident to safely, and also to understand who was left in a hot zone or near the warm zone, what missteps were made and how we can correct them when working in and around these railroad yards every day without injuries or death. During the course of our duties, railroaders are first responders by the very nature of our job. The rail carriers owe us this emergency evacuation safety drills in order to come home to our families in the same condition as when we went to work. The rail air carriers owe the multi agencies of first responders the right to safely respond, assist, and contain a hazmat incident while depending upon the rail worker's ability and training as the first on the scene of an incident to survive and safely evacuate a hot zone in a rail yard to provide the valuable information first responders depend upon.
Mr. Brown, could you?
I'll wrap it up. Being 49 years at the locomotive injury, I have been personally involved in hazmat incidents where the untrained have led me personally into harm's way. One was I was brought in on a train into a yard track that the track next to it had a tank car of anhydrous ammonia leaking that was known to be leaking. They didn't tell me till they told me to stop my train. My train happened. They asked me what the car number was. I looked out the window. There was the car. I could smell anhydrous ammonia. They told me to stay in the locomotive. Locomotive was very drafty. There was a smell of anhydrous ammonia. Me and the conductor exited the train, walked up on the other side of the track, and walked for a mile and a half to a place to be safely removed from the area. There was another incident, very first time of 1991. The largest evacuation of any U.S. city in the United States up in Superior, Wisconsin. I lived about 3 miles from the location. Because of my training from the hazmat training that I received in the George Meade Institute in Maryland, that I was able to evacuate my family in a timely manner in the wee hours of the morning. We need these people to understand that we need this evacuation training. It's great that we have multiple agencies involved. I like to see them involved all the time, but that's a big ordeal. But we should have on a monthly, if not a bi-monthly basis of how to evacuate, because you don't get the split decision, second decision making just by looking at a book.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Appitz, did you want to weigh in? I have you on the list. You're next.
Mr. Chair. As Mr. Appitz comes up, we should acknowledge that it's his birthday and embarrass him.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for that, Representative Kosnick, and happy birthday.
Thank you.
No singing.
thank you.
Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Appitz.
Kind of you, Mr. Chairman. John Appitz, Executive Director of the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association. And if I can indulge the committee for just 1 second, I want to tell you about a developing situation in Canada that may have implication down here in Minnesota. It could affect rail transportation or other sorts of transportation in Minnesota and across the U.S. There are a number of protests that are going on up in Canada right now dealing with the installation or the approval of a natural gas pipeline basically across Canada. The Canadian National Railroad has experienced a number of blockades which have basically stopped traffic on the railroad in eastern Canada. There's anticipation that could happen in western Canada as well. As of, I think it was the middle of last week, there were about 400 trains that were basically just shut down and not moving. The implication for that is CN does run into Minnesota. And into the United States. It runs basically through International Falls, Rainier, up there into Minnesota CP, used to be Canadian Pacific, also runs in that area and is having this sort of experience as well. And the Port of Duluth has indicated that they're seeing about or potentially going to see about $3.4 million worth of economic activity basically eviscerated if this continues. The Government of Canada is initiating some conversations with the groups that are bringing forward these blockades, but they kind of don't have anything to do with railroads, but they do because the railroads are now being blocked. I raise this simply because you may hear about it. I didn't want you caught unawares of this, and it's of major consequence if something else develops. Now to the bill, if I could, unless there's questions on that. I did put a little press release about that situation in your materials. If you want to read that, it'll give you more details about what's involved. Mr. Chairman, to the bill, if I may. I think it's helpful to have a context for what you're doing if you decide to go forward with this bill. And so I thought what we would do is very briefly, well, not very briefly, because there's a lot of stuff here that is involved in rail safety, but talk about the context in which rail safety takes place. You've heard what doesn't happen. I think it would be helpful to understand what does happen to assure worker, employee, and the public safety. So let me back up real quickly and give you a quick context, because I don't think we did this last year. There are 21 railroads that operate in the state of Minnesota. Four of those railroads are what we would call Class 1 or large railroads. They operate nationally and internationally, CN, CP, Union Pacific, and the Burlington Northern, the BNSF. There is a Class 2 railroad, smaller railroad that operates in Minnesota and operates in southern Minnesota. This bill deals with those five large railroads. The 17 railroads, smaller short lines, are not impacted directly by this. I haven't discussed that with the author, but we'll see on Thursday. We'll chat about that some more. Understand that all railroads, all 21 of those railroads, and there are a couple of sort of tourist commercial railroads, one that runs out of Duluth, the Lake Superior Railroad, are regulated by the Federal Railroad Administration along with other federal agencies. They're all regulated that way for two reasons. Number one, we're talking about interstate commerce, and we are talking about common carrier responsibilities. Railroads carry what they are given, and they're responsible to do that in the privilege of being common carriers. Railroads also provide for their own protection and safety. They have response plans, which we'll discuss in just a minute, as well as coordinating those response plans with local responders, first responders, fire departments, emergency responding vehicles, and depending on the nature of the emergency, various different responses are brought into play. These are extensive plans that are written, rewritten, and discussed. There's a great deal of planning that goes into this. There are major plans that are put together. We'll talk about those in just a minute. Training goes on and exercising goes on in advance of an incident, so people are ready. As I've heard railroad hazmat personnel say to me, the first time that you meet your counterpart first responder ought not be when that incident occurs. It ought be long before that incident occurs. So that's a bit of the context. I want to give you that if I could. And how about that? You did that? You did that, didn't you? It's my birthday present. Okay. Thank you very much. Yes. I asked a couple people from CP if they could join us and just give you that context before you step forward with this bill so that you have a bit of an understanding. Dale Buchholz, who is the system manager for hazmat for emergency response, in other words, the entire system, CP, which operates here in Minnesota, about 1,200 miles of track, and Ed Dankbar, who is right here in Minnesota and represents the region dealing with safety as well, can give you a sense of what they do to prepare for incidents like the one that we're discussing here. So I'm going to ask them, if I may, Mr. Chairman, to come forward. I'll step back. If you're not going to sing, what's the point? And if you have questions, I'll be happy to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Appitz, and happy birthday. I'd like to call on Mr. Buchholz and Mr. Dankbar if they could come forward.
Mr. Chairman, could we respond to some of those comments, please, through Phil Qualley.
Well, I think it sounds like, Mr. Appitz, this is sort of a continuation of your testimony. Is that correct? So why don't we do this? We'll let the gentleman from CP Rail testify, and then you can respond, and then members will have a quick discussion. I'd like to move this along. We've got two more bills after this. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Name is Dale Buckholz. I'm the system manager, emergency response for Canadian Pacific Railway, covering from Vancouver to Montreal, plus our U.S. operations. I'm involved with hazmat programs, and I've worked for the railroad since 1999.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Hornstein, for having allowing us to present here, and I won't make this long. I'll turn part of this over to my counterpart, Ed Dankbar. A little background. Railroads are governed by federal law, 49 CFR. All railroad employees receive mandatory hazmat and security training within the first 90 days of hire. Railroad employees receive hazmat training every 3 years thereafter, and the FRA audits the hazmat training records every 3 years. Training modules in the T&E, or train and engine men, conductors and engineers, for example, curriculum for qualified personnel in engineering, operations, mechanical, cover hazmat, which is hazardous materials, hazardous communications, and emergency response. Engineering qualifies every calendar year, and they cover hazardous materials, materials of trade, and the key modules are in these training programs. In Minnesota, CP has four health and safety committees that represent all CP Minnesota terminals. All the crafts have a seat within the health and safety committee to include conductors and engineers. Each committee meets monthly, and each committee conducts safety audits monthly within terminals and, in some cases, customer sidings. When we look at the overlay of regulation, in 2019, Canadian Pacific, along with other Class 1 railways, submitted to PHMSA, the Pipeline Hazardous Materials and Safety Administration, a comprehensive oil spill response plan to be reviewed by US EPA and the Federal Railroad Administration. CP updates these corporate plans annually and reviews the yard plans. I'd like to show what some of this looks like. I do not have a copy of the comprehensive oil spill response plan because I wouldn't be able to carry it in here. It's just too large of a document to print. However, I have a copy which you can get online at www.cpr.ca is our integrated contingency plan. There's also a community response plan that communities can review online, and we're no different than any other railway because all railways had to submit these plans either to the federal government through the Comprehensive Oil Spill Response Plan or some other entity. In this integrated contingency plan, we have an appendices, and it grows. We like to call them annexes. One of the annexes in this corporate document is the 115E spill bill, along with other states' spill requirements to include our yard plans. Every yard, rail yard, that CP operates or owns has a emergency response action plan. And in this plan, we discuss and show with our employees through meetings, and in some cases, we can use St. Paul as an example, the last 3 years, a tabletop exercise, where we invite the first responders along with community members and railroad employees to look at this plan and understand it, where the evacuation points are, where the rally points are. One thing that disturbed me today that I heard is someone say they saw hazmat workers working on top of a rail car while employees went back to work. I wouldn't do that. I'd want to have some sound science. If I had an air monitoring device and I was working with the first responders in the community, such as fire or the state's chemical assessment teams, I would not put myself at risk. And that's who we work with as first responders. So I kind of question whether we would put a CP employee at risk. We use sound air monitoring and sound science. With that, we have stormwater prevention plans and other plans that are submitted to states for review that have rally points and accountability so we can find out where our workers are. All railroads in the state of Minnesota comply with the Community Right to Know Act with Tier 1 and Tier 2 reporting. This information is used for communities for planning for chemical emergencies. The federal act requires the industry to report on the storage, use, and release of hazardous materials to federal, state, and local governments. These governments, including Indian tribes, use this information to prepare for and protect their communities from potential risks. Ed, would you like to expand on that? Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Buchholz, Mr. Dankbar. State your name for the committee and welcome.
Yep. Mr. Chairman, committee, my name is Ed Dankbar, the Hazardous Materials and Emergency Response Officer for CP Rail's U.S. West Division. Cover North Dakota, Minnesota, Western Wisconsin, Northern Iowa. Dale covered most of it, but one thing I will add, in addition to doing drill or tabletop exercises within our terminals, we also have worked extensively with our first responders. Excitingly, we're entering our fourth year of the Minnesota Rail Summit, where we actually collectively bring the 11 chemical assessment teams, the state chemical assessment teams together, and the two emergency response teams that the state has. And we go and we train them specifically on railroad emergencies, everything from product-specific emergencies to container emergencies. In addition to our local outreach, where we're actually going into the fire departments and the communities that we operate to make sure that they're better aware and prepared for the products and situations they may be facing that are transversing through their community.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. And what I'll ask Representative Joachim, and if there's any other committee questions, and then a quick response from the author, and then we'll bring this to a close, this hearing on this bill. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll make it quick. I was getting distracted, and I just want to make sure I heard the gentleman from CP, I believe it's Mr. Buchholz, correctly when you said the plan, the evacuation plan was so big that you couldn't carry it in here?
No, not the evacuation plan. The evacuation plan is very small and concise and easy to read because we don't want to have something that's cumbersome. It has checkoff lists, it has maps, and it's only a couple of pages long with some phone numbers. That plan is the federal plan, the Comprehensive Oil Spill Response Plan, that has some similar information in it. The plan that should be followed is our Corporate Integrated Contingency Plan at Canadian Pacific. That's what we call it. I'm sure other railroads have similar plans. Part of that plan is our Yard Emergency Response Plan, which is for simple to read, a couple of pages with checkoff lists so people can understand the process and where to evacuate or where to meet.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Joachim.
I'm already confused again. It sounds like there are a lot of plans in the books, and that really lends itself to why you actually need some live practice. Practice makes perfect. This isn't something we should just let happen, and the training sounds like your workers are asking for this training. So I think having all these different plans and everything you're mentioning sounds great, but it kind of lends to the fact why we actually need live practice.
And that's why we have four health and safety committees in the state of Minnesota on behalf of Canadian Pacific. So we can sit down with those health and safety committees and the crafts that are attending and being represented, and we cover these. They have to sign off on it, and it's reviewed.
Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You. Representative Yuki.
Thank you. Just so I could get my point across maybe more clearly on record, live practice is needed, not just plans on paper. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from members? If not, I will ask maybe the chair, the author, Chair Sundin, and if there's anyone else that wants to make some closing comments or respond, and then we'll take a vote and move on. Chairman Sundin.
Thank you.
Thank you again to Mr. Buchholz and Mr. Dankbar. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair Hurst. Chairman. Just a couple comments from Phil Qualley with the UTU, and then I'll close up quickly.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'll be very brief. Two CP's comments regarding the containment that was described earlier. It was a different railroad. It was not a CP railroad where the worker was put back into the containment zone without protection. I am sorry to report that regarding the CP Safety Committee, we know that the committees have asked for these live drills. They have not happened. And unfortunately, CP does control the Safety Committee meeting minutes, so there's now no documentation. UP does not have functioning safety committees. The CN does not have functioning safety committees. We've asked for 5 years to get back into a safety committee with accountability. And the BNSF Safety Committee, one of our participants was just threatened with termination for doing exemplary work for safety from the BNSF management. He is currently off duty. Finally, I want to just quickly address the focus of our bill has nothing to do with public protest. We implore the public, any and all persons, to stay off the tracks. Again, I will simply say that Class 3's museum railroads are excluded, and we can have all the plans we want in the world, but when it comes down to if they're doing all those plans, the legislature must ask the question, why aren't the workers getting the exercises? Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Closing comments, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee for hearing this. I've got a couple of personal stories that are relevant to this bill, but I'll save them or for another committee where I have greater latitude. Thank you. This is a good bill. I appreciate your support.
Okay. Hearing no further discussion, I will renew my motion that House File 2985 be referred to, I'm sorry, 2987. Be referred to the Labor Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. You're on your way to your own committee, and I look forward to hearing those stories. Okay, members, we have a couple more bills. The next bill on our agenda is House File 3091, Representative Cagle. As Representative Cagle is making her way up, I wanted to thank a couple of several members of our committee. This bill comes, we viewed this among other sites in the North Metro. Representative Heinrich, Representative West, I want to thank you for your involvement. They're not listening. In helping to organize that trip, and also Representative Bernardi and Representative Cagle, the four of you led a very nice a tour that the committee had up in the northern suburbs, and we were able to see a variety of transportation-related issues. I mean, it seems like every issue before this committee has some manifestation in the North Metro, so I appreciate the four of you helping us out with that wonderful trip, insightful trip. So, Representative Cagle, welcome to your committee, and you, I think, have a motion for us.
Yeah, I'd like to move House File 3091.
Okay, and I think that since there's no, doesn't appear that there's a fiscal impact, so that's going to the general register. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What this bill would do is it would just direct Met Council to include an analysis of implementing a arterial BRT along the central corridor, as well as evaluation of regular route suburb to suburb bus service in the next evaluation. I think as you guys all saw when we came up to the North Metro that we are kind of lacking in transit options up there, and the population is growing, and so we're just simply asking that Met Council look at that as a option for an arterial BRT, and then also evaluate some of the suburb to suburb. When I put in to the trip planner, one of the largest employers in Blaine is the Aveda Institute. Going from the transit hub at Northtown to the Aveda Institute is not an option. And to go to, let's say, like the Northtown Transit Hub again, to target corporate campus over in Brooklyn Center, we'd have to go all the way down to Nicollet Mall and then back north up to Target, and it would Brooklyn Park, sorry. And it would, if I caught the bus at 7:30, I wouldn't get to Target until 8:45. And so it kind of just shows that how crazy it is up there. So with that, I will stand for any questions.
Thank you for your bill. And as you know, there's quite an extensive map of potential new arterial BRTs. But I am sensitive, particularly after our tour, some of the specific interests in the North Metro for this. And so thank you for bringing the bill forward. Are there any questions from the committee? Did don't know if the Met Council wants to weigh in, though. Okay, Representative Bernardi.
Oh, Mr. Chair, sometimes the credit doesn't get to where it's due, and I want to thank you for making this possible for us to do this tour, as well as the staff who put a lot of time into it and the members who participated. Thank you for being a part of it.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your work. All right. Well, is there
Chair,
any
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Representative Nelson, another North Metro member of our committee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And going back to when the Botnell line was called the Northwest Corridor and North Star was being developed, people couldn't understand why we needed Northwest Corridor, now Botnell and North Star. They forgot about that little creek that runs between Fridley and Brooklyn Center and Brooklyn Park, and that prohibits travel back and forth. And yes, suburb to suburb on the north side, but also suburb to suburb bus transit is something that's sorely lacking. And as they said, if you live in one suburb and you want to go to the next suburb that may be just the next one over, you have to go downtown, take a bus back out, and it's something that we need to look at in our bus system going forward.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Shetland,
great.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and members, Judd Shetland with the Metropolitan Council. For the sake of time, I know that there's another bill to be heard yet. I just would like to share that the Met Council supports this bill. In fact, when we are doing our Network Next evaluation, we have this incorporated into that already. So we're happy to report to Representative Cagle that we intend to do this. And with that, I'll stop so you can keep moving on with the rest of your hearing.
Thank you. It's good to have the Met Council's position. Any closing comments, Representative Cagle? Representative Porkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very briefly, I just wanted to point out that we do have some suburb to suburb services available in the metro area. The suburban transit providers, after some experimentation, apparently have a pretty successful route operating in the South Metro, and so it's possible. It can be done, and I thank the representative for bringing this issue forward.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Okay, hearing no further discussion, Representative Cagle, will you renew your motion?
I will renew my motion to move House File 3091 to the General Register.
Thank you very much. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Members, our last bill is House File 3075, Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is
let's
you want to
make sure we've got a motion
yeah.
here.
It needs to go to Judiciary and Civil
okay,
Law.
Okay, so Representative Elkins moves that House File 3075 be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Division.
Yes.
Proceed. This is an important bill. Thank you for bringing it forward.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the catalyst for this was the knowledge that the city of Minneapolis is beginning to collect travel data from the scooter companies, Lime and Bird, for the purposes of making sure that their contracts with these scooter companies are being enforced in terms of things like ensuring that the scooters are being equitably distributed around the city, and for planning purposes to know that the scooters are being picked up in the evenings, or finding out what places where they might be accumulating and where it might make sense, for example, to have dedicated scooter parking. So to the city's credit, they are not actually keeping the very detailed granular data they get from the scooter companies, but there is the data comes in an industry standard format that was developed originally by the city of Los Angeles working with shared mobility companies of all kind. And the raw data includes a great deal of personal information about the person renting this scooter, as well as very detailed address-to-address trip-level information. So under the Data Practices Act, any such data that a city elected to store, or city, county, any level of government, would be designated as public data in the absence of a specific exemption in the Data Practices Act. So the purpose of this bill is to ensure that any shared mobility data, scooters, Uber, Lyft, whatever, that state or local governments in Minnesota collect, that data about specific trip destinations, personally identifiable information included in those records would be classified as private and non-public, so that the privacy of the users would be protected.
Thank you for that concise explanation. Representative Runbeck.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I know this is a very complicated area, what's public, what's private data, but absent a, specifying that this industry and their information is private, non-public, I mean, can we assume that any time, do we need to identify every collector of online information and make sure that they understand that, rules apply?
Yeah, the purpose of this is to cover any shared mobility vendor of any kind. We do not want to be in a position where every time there is a new type of vendor providing these services, we have to go back to the Data Practices Act and add another chapter. But the nature of the Data Practices Act itself is that by default, any information that falls into the hands of government is considered to be public unless there is a specific exception rendering it private and non-public.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe I need a tutorial. But, for example, I think Metro Transit now collects data, doesn't it? I mean, you can
there
have
are
your
specific exceptions for Metro Transit data in the Data Practices Act.
Yes.
And some of these provisions were modeled after the existing exceptions for Metro Transit.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay. Did you have any testifiers, Representative?
Nope.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Are there any other? Yes, Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure I know Representative Kosnick did some work on data sharing for Met Council to be able to try to have some of the federal funding when we're moving folks with Metro Mobility. This doesn't affect that, does that?
No.
Okay. Just want to make
sure. We did have the assistance of the, Matt Ayling from Minnesota Council on Government Information did a lot of the drafting on this bill. And we had input from Metro Transit, the City of Minneapolis, and several other stakeholders as well.
Representative Kosnick, I see you've moved the microphone in position. Did you
but just to add clarification to Representative Joachim's question, when we did that for Metro Mobility, it was limited in scope of just the pertinent information to obtain the federal match. Mm-hmm. And so similar to this bill, it was just a very limited amount of data was shared, and that was only between Metro Mobility or Metro Transit and Met Council and DHS. Yeah, good question.
Okay, any further discussion of House File 3075? Okay, hearing none.
The motion is to that we approve this and move it to the Committee on Judiciary and Civil Law.
Yes, the technical term is referred, but
referred. Okay,
I guess for all intents and purposes, we're doing the latter or the former. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Members, we will meet again Thursday. No meeting a week from today. And hopefully we'll have some more information about Real ID and related issues. So with that, we are adjourned.